Welcome back to this week's Off the Bench podcast from the Premier League. I'm FPL Harry.
And I'm Oscar, FPL Focal.
Well, another week, another Erling Haaland haul and another Salah blank. And of course, we need to start adding someone like Antoine Semenyo to the mix with the amount of returns he's getting this season. There was lots of talk going into the game week about the likes of Gyökeres, Bukayo Saka, Bruno Fernandes, lots of them picking up returns, although not too many big hauls this week. But someone on the pod this week who has done very well, one of those playing their bench boost, Oscar, one of the 280,000 playing their bench boost, along with 400,000 playing their wildcard and 217,000 playing their triple captain. And I imagine most of those on Erling Haaland for his big return. But Oscar, go on. How was your game week?
Yeah, it was an unbelievable week. Yeah, like you said, I was one of those 280,000 that played the bench boost. And overall, it couldn't have gone much better, really. 96 points, that was a big green arrow. Gabriel with a double-digit return. Obviously, Haaland captain. He got the brace. Bruno even got me 8 points against Liverpool. Didn't expect much from him. Dubravka got me 9 on the bench boost. But yeah, the highlight for me was Mukiele. He got a goal, an assist. He got defensive contribution points. And then he also got the 3 bonus points. So he got me 17 points alone, which was very, very lucky. How did you get on?
Yeah, I feel like in seasons gone by, we've spoken about a defender 15-point return. But now with defensive contributions, that's the 17 is the new 15 when you're looking at a defender. I had a decent enough game week. I scored 70 points without a chip being played. So a small green arrow for me inside the top 1 million for the first time this season. The double Arsenal defense with David Raya and Gabriel continued to do well. I had Bruno Fernandes, quite happy with that, away at Liverpool for him to get 8 points with an assist very late on, just before he was about to be subbed off. If the ball had gone out for anything else, rather than it going straight in the back of the net, he would have been taken off for a two-pointer. Haaland, of course, and then Illiman and Ndai, quite happy with him actually, away at Manchester City. Those were probably my two weakest in Bruno and Ndai, and to come away with 12 points from the two of those, I feel quite happy with. But like a lot of people, the big disappointments this week were probably Reinders coming off just before the 60th minute, so not only losing the second appearance point, but would have been a clean sheet point for him as well. João Pedro with a two, continuing to fail to perform, and then having the wrong Arsenal attacker in Gyökeres. But a green arrow for me. Dubravka's 9 on the bench staring at me, but I was never realistically going to go anywhere near him.
Well, Chelsea was the first game of the game week, and obviously you're a Chelsea fan as well. I've got a few questions about Chelsea. Should we start with that game? Nottingham Forest 0, Chelsea 3.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we probably won't spend too much time talking about Nottingham Forest. They have, of course, just before recording this, appointed Sean Dyche as their new manager. I think the general consensus will be they're probably a little bit of a wait and see, particularly because some of the upcoming fixtures for them are not quite as appealing, with Bournemouth, Man United, Leeds, but then Liverpool in the next four. We expect them to be a little bit more pragmatic, particularly defensively, which is not really what we saw in this game, right?
Yeah, potentially we could have a few picks like Milenkovic, Murillo, Williams back on the table as options. Maybe not. I was looking at Williams because I think he's dropped down to, I think it might be 4.8 mil. But it was Caicedo on the bench, wasn't it? No Enzo Fernandez in the squad. Chelsea named a Premier League 11 without Caicedo for the first time since Christmas Eve 2023, which was against Wolves. That was a 65 consecutive starts for Caicedo coming to an end there, but he did make the bench. But yeah, it was no Fernandez in the team. I was looking to buy him. Like, I really, really want him because you've got some nice fixtures. But yeah, he didn't even make the squad. Maresca said he's out of an injury. Hopefully, he'll be back very soon. Obviously, you've got Champions League midweek, so we can kind of assess there, see if he's back and available, if he's fit and ready to start. I still think he's a really nice option. I thought Gyu actually looked really sharp when he came on. What did you think overall?
Yeah, I think, you know, going into the game, seeing the lineup come out and there be no Caicedo and no Enzo in it, and of course no Palmer still with his more long-term injury than we expected, it definitely didn't fill us with as much confidence as maybe we thought we'd have going into this game against a Forest team who have been struggling recently. But the first half, actually, I think we were quite fortunate. People will be looking at the Chelsea defence over the next few weeks with some of the fixtures coming up, with some of the attacking returns that they're getting, and of course the clean sheet this week. But it was quite fortunate. I think Nottingham Forest had over 2 expected goals in this game. They were quite unfortunate not to get anything from it. It's really the attack that I would look at. I agree. I really like Enzo Fernandez, and when he comes back into the team, of course, keep an eye on the Champions League game midweek, and then of course in the press conference ahead of the match against Sunderland in game week 9. If he is going to be back available, I think he probably is one of, if not my favorite Chelsea player to own at the moment. The other one is João Pedro, and he's the one in an awful lot of teams at the moment. And he's played a lot of minutes up front. And actually, he's spoken a little bit, and Maresca has done the same, about how it's actually not his best position and actually how he is a better number 10 than he is as a number 9 playing up front. And as you said, Mark Yew coming into that team at halftime completely transformed the way that Chelsea played. Now, João Pedro is suspended in the Champions League midweek, so we won't get any minutes out of him. And it might mean that Mark Yew needs to start that game. But if we're going to see Mark Yew playing up front going forward, it doesn't necessarily mean that I think you should go and buy him, although he is 4.3 million forward if you're looking there. There is another cheap forward that I'm sure we'll talk about later on in this podcast. But it's more the fact that it might boost João Pedro because he's so involved when he plays that number 10. He's not as good as that sort of hold-up striker playing against two centre-backs, but in the middle of the pitch, he can cause an awful lot of damage. So I actually think that's more of a boost than anything, that we might see João Pedro back in his favoured position.
Yeah, it's not as simple as, oh, he's playing striker, like, that's good. Some players do better in other positions. I think Bowen's a good example. He's some games he ends up being up top, and some games he plays right wing. Actually, right wing, I think, suits him more. But yeah, Gu's an interesting one. I'm looking at Jokeres in my team, and I'm wondering, now the bench boost is out of the way, I can afford to have that spot on my bench where it doesn't matter if they're not someone that plays. I'm sure he'll get minutes mainly off the bench, but I'm thinking about, you know, Jokeres to Gu, and then one of my midfielders, like, Stack up to Saka. So, yeah, he's tempting me. James, 18-pointer. So it was a goal, an assist, clean sheet, and I think he got all three bonus as well. So that was a bit nostalgia, that. Of course, we've seen this from James over the years. For me, despite the haul, I can't see myself going there. He started 5 out of 8 this season, so that immediately puts me off. And of course, there's the injury record. I have to say, Chelsea have managed him really well this season, but I mean, is James an option now, or would you rather Chalobah or Cucurella?
Yeah, I think the fact that you said Chelsea have managed him so well is probably the key takeaway from this season so far, is that I still think that he will be managed. We have a lot of games between now and Christmas, and some of those games are great, but it might be those slightly easier games that you want him to play being the ones that he misses out in. And as a Chelsea fan, I know any Chelsea fan listening will probably be, I'm just happy enough to have Reece James back on the pitch and be able to watch him and know that he's contributing to my team without risking him in my FPL team. I do think some of the attacking threat is getting back to being a little bit better, and some of the upcoming fixtures are nice. But I just, as a pessimistic Chelsea fan that's seen Reece James over the years do and unfortunately have what he's had, I probably wouldn't recommend going back there. And if you wanted a Chelsea defender, I think Chalobah would probably be the safest bet, given he started again, having come back from suspension.
And my last question on Chelsea is, so you started the season with João Pedro, which was a great decision because he did so well in the first few game weeks. I think it was like 2 goals, 3 assists or something. He's now blanked 4 games in a row. What makes it so difficult is, like we said earlier, you've got such amazing fixtures. It's Sunderland home, Spurs away, Wolves home, Burnley away. Then it's Arsenal home. Maybe there's the option to bench. And then it's Leeds away, Bournemouth away, Everton home. It's just such great fixtures for, what, like 8-9 game weeks. So do you keep João Pedro, or, you know, is it time to look somewhere else like Mateta?
Well, I think when we look at Mateta, I think I would keep João Pedro for the Sunderland at home game. And then for a lot of people, this might be the end of the road for him, given the past few weeks. And I've been very big advocate for keep him, because the fixtures are coming good and he's always involved. And I still think those things stand true. But when you do have other forwards who are playing in the natural position, you know, you're not worrying about where they're going to play every week. They're playing a lot of minutes and their goal threat every single week is really good, whether they're scoring the chances or missing the chances. You've got someone like a Voltimado or a Mateta just looking very good every week. So I think with Mateta, they've got Arsenal away this week, and I wouldn't move João Pedro to Mateta despite the fact that the prices are probably going in opposite directions and Mateta is on good form and João Pedro is not. I would still give João Pedro just one final week. If you wanted to move to Voltimado, it might be something slightly different, but I still think I just want to wait one more week.
Yeah, so maybe we'll talk about Newcastle next, because I'm looking at Newcastle assets as well. I'm basically looking at defender around 5 million. So Chalobah was one that crossed my mind. James did, but like I said, I'm just not really considering it. Voltimado, yeah, deserves a mention. That's 4 goals in his last 5 games. So he's blanked just once. And I'm looking at the defenders. Obviously, Newcastle defence has been great. 5 clean sheets is the same as Arsenal this season. 5.81 expected goals conceded is second best. after Arsenal as well this season. I do wonder a little bit, like, will they start to struggle with Hull and Livramento both out? Plus, they've got Champions League. It's quite a lot. But yeah, Burns tempting me, Botman, maybe Trippier. But the problem with Trippier is Livramento could be back after the next international break. So you might only get 3 or 4 games out of Trippier. But there are some options there. I mean, what are your thoughts on the Newcastle assets overall?
Yeah, I'm looking, I like Pope in goal. I like Dan Burn probably as my pick of the defenders. And then, of course, Walter Mada up front. They've got Fulham at home and West Ham away in the next two games. And particularly defensively, I quite like those. For investment, I don't think Fulham at home is the easiest in terms of goals scored. But if they're without Anderson, who did look like he might have picked up a bit of an injury, that will be a boost to the Newcastle attackers. And Walter Mada looks like he wants to score every single game and whenever he gets a chance. So starting off defensively, yeah, I do have an eye on buying into one of them. As you said, it's probably Pope in goal, although I've got David Raya, and to make the swap doesn't really feel worth it unless I needed the Arsenal spot for something else or I needed the money for something else. But Dan Burn is probably the one that I'm having a look at. Now, with those injuries, he's playing at left back, which we would normally think, you know, a player playing at left back instead of centre back is a boost for them in FPL, but it does impact his defensive contribution numbers quite heavily. And he's then not as good going, you know, he's not a marauding fullback who's going to get loads of attacking returns playing at left back. So I actually wonder if it does impact him negatively moving out there once the likes of Lewis Hall and Livramento come back in the next international break. Potentially he might move back. He's probably just the safest, but there is a little bit of uncertainty about exactly what you're going to get from him depending on where he plays. So I definitely have an eye on them defensively. They didn't keep a clean sheet here, but away at Brighton is never going to be an easy fixture. And particularly at home, they've been right up there this season.
So we're both on double Arsenal defence. I think you've got Gabriel and Raya, and then we've got Gyökeres. Do you think it's a valid idea to look at Raya to Pope and then that frees up the Arsenal slot to potentially go double Arsenal attack with Saka? Or do you think you just set and forget with Raya?
I think if I was, I mean, we can talk about Arsenal. I think if we were moving around Arsenal players, it would be more in favour of one of the other defenders. Like I look at someone like a Jurrien Timber or a Calafiori and think there's a lot of upside there rather than going for the double attack, which I just think defensively they look so strong. But if I was on wildcard now for anyone looking to play the chip or anyone looking to buy a new goalkeeper, I think Pope would be the number one option I would go with.
Makes sense. Should we talk about Arsenal then?
Yeah, let's go for it. I mean, away at Fulham has been a bit of a difficult fixture for Arsenal over the past couple of seasons. And we've said that about a couple of games so far this season when they hosted West Ham. There was a similar story that their historical record was that was a fixture that they've slipped up on. But it feels like Arteta is not going to let that happen this season. They feel like they are knowing when these slightly more difficult games are. They're making sure they've got a completely full strength lineup out for them, and they are doing absolutely everything they can to score and then let no opposition score against them. I think there's only been one open play goal they've conceded so far this season, 2 from set pieces, and the only other one being Erling Haaland. And it doesn't feel like anyone can stop Erling Haaland scoring at the moment. But for me, I know Saka picked up defensive contributions. He also then picked up bonus points, so managed to come away with 7 points despite not getting an attacking return. And as a Gyökeres owner, I'm not bitter or salty about that at all, the fact that I went with the wrong one and Saka has come away with a 7-pointer here. But it's still the defensive story for me. Another game, another clean sheet. Gabriel, the king of them all, with another attacking return and all the bonus to go with it. Timber also close to the bonus. Saliba is in there. Calafiori also had a whole host of chances in that game. Talk to me as an Arsenal fan, because you just mentioned you're wondering about going for the double attack. But for me, it feels so clear that the double defence is the way to be.
Yeah, it's one of those, like, if Arsenal start banging the goals and you've got Saka and Gyökeres, that could be huge upside, especially if they combine for goals. But yeah, the Arsenal defence is just ridiculous this season. Like, 3 goals conceded in 8 games is absolutely crazy. Best team for expected goals conceded. And I've got an interesting stat here. After that 1-0 win over Fulham, Arsenal haven't even conceded a shot on target in consecutive Premier League games. The last time that happened was November in the last title-winning season, 2003-2004. That's how good the defence has been. Not a shot on target conceded the last two. And then coincidentally as well, the second game actually in that run back in 2003 was against Fulham as well. So yeah, I'm happy with the double Arsenal defence. I'm going to stick with that. And I think the only thing I might do is swap Gyökeres to Saka. But yeah, in the end, they did both blank. It was a 7-pointer of a Saka, but luckily it wasn't a bigger swing. But Saka looked really good. I mean, since 2020, actually, there's only been 4 times that a player's created 6 chances and also had 6 successful take-ons. 2 of those 4 are Saka as well. He did it against Fulham. He also did it against Leicester last year. Kluivert did it against Brighton early this year. And it was Elise did it against Leeds in 2023. So, yeah, Saka, he's like a proven FPL asset. I've actually been impressed by Gyökeres. He's doing everything right except scoring. So I'm actually not fully sold on making that switch. And I'm not sure I'm going to be doing it for next game week either. Maybe I will consider it if, again, Gyökeres disappoints. But right now, I think I'll leave it. And I actually wouldn't be surprised if he takes the next penalty, which might be a bit of a hot take. Because I know Saka did take the last one, but Arteta's been saying, you know, we're desperate for him to get a goal. That goal that Saka got was his 200th Arsenal appearance, if I recall, and it was 100 goal involvement. So it was sort of like a landmark or a milestone game for him. And I just actually wouldn't be surprised, but we'll have to see. Could be famous last words if Saka takes the next one.
I know. I feel like as Gyökeres owner, I'm holding out hope that it might be him that steps up to take the next one. But the fact that I feel like I'm relying on him being given a penalty in order to get a return at the moment shows the level of confidence I feel like I've got having him in my team. As I say, I don't feel that confident. It feels weird making a swap between 2 players from the same team because you're still wanting Arsenal to score goals, but you're just hoping that it's someone else that does it, which always feels slightly strange. But yeah, defensively is really where I'm looking to focus on. Fulham, there's probably not too much to talk about apart from the fact that Anderson may have picked up a slight hamstring issue. They don't think it's going to be that serious, but they will, of course, have an update later on.
I was just going to ask you on that, actually. So a lot of people were looking to bench boost next game week that had Anderson, and it's a potential hamstring injury, which, I mean, he would be out for next game week. If you're one of those managers that was looking to bench boost next week, would you just swap Anderson to another 4.5 mil-ish defender that's got a reasonable enough fixture and just get the bench boost out of the way? Or would you just wait for a potentially better week to pop up later?
I'm sure you'll agree, as someone who's played the bench boost, it's a lovely feeling not having to think and plan for it, because every week, you know, thinking, is my bench good enough this week? If you get an injury, you're going to have to deal with it further down the line. So to be honest, if he was ruled out for any sort of significant amount of time and you were going to have to use a transfer to get him out, regardless whether it was this week or in the future, I probably would just deal with it. And actually, you could probably, if you were planning on it this week and he was away at Newcastle, you could probably use a transfer to buy a defender who's maybe slightly better this week, right? So if you did Anderson to a defender like Dan Burn that we've just spoken about, or a Chelsea defender at home to Sunderland this week, not only are you replacing Anderson with a slightly better point scorer this week, but you're also probably improving your squad for the long term by buying into a Chelsea or a Newcastle defender. So if you are in that position as someone who's used their bench boost and not having to worry about who's on their bench every week, I would probably look to get rid of it. Talking of bench players, you spoke a little bit about a cheap forward. Let's speak about probably the cheap forward of the game week and probably the game of the game week in Crystal Palace 3, Bournemouth 3. As an owner of a Crystal Palace defender and a Bournemouth defender in this game, it's not quite how I wanted things to go, although there was an awful lot of defensive contributions to be handed out. Both of them got them for me, including Senesi and Richards. But Krupe Jr. and Mateta, along with Munoz and Semenyo, probably the 4 big takeaways from this game. I have the investment in Bournemouth in Senesi and Semenyo, but looking at a cheap forward potentially to do a bit of a squad structure change. Krupe Jr. is interesting, depending on the injury to Evan Nilsson. Of course, that's why Krupe Jr. played, because Evan Nilsson was injured. But I feel like I don't have enough Crystal Palace attack. That feels like the big takeaway to me.
Yeah, fully agree with that. Of course, it's Arsenal away next, so fortunately, there's no immediate rush. But from game week 10, I'm definitely looking at Palace attackers. It's Saar or Mateta for me. I'm not really looking anywhere else. Brentford home, and then it's Brighton home, Wolves away, Man United home, Burnley away, Fulham home. It's just a really nice run. And then in game week 16, as a reminder, Saar is off to AFCON. I think that'll be around game week 16, but you still get 6 decent fixtures out of him. So I also wouldn't use that as a reason to avoid him personally. But yeah, Evan Nilsson, like, unexpectedly not in the squad. Iriola did say it's not a serious one, but yeah, 4.5 mil forward Krupe Jr. comes in, gets a brace for a 12-pointer. I mean, who saw that coming? Mateta, though, I can't remember seeing a player get a higher XG than this, but I'm sure it's happened somewhere. 3.67 expected goals he got against Bournemouth. Bags the hat trick.
He was the third biggest XG underperformer of the game week this week. And he scored a hat trick.
Oh, yeah. I think he got 4.44 XG, didn't he? So,
yeah
that's still actually, because he missed a sitter right at the end. Yeah, I mean, I'm actually looking at him potentially from game week 10. Like, if João Pedro blanks home to Sunderland, then I think it's going to be really hard to keep hold of him when Mateta's right there putting up really good numbers week in, week out. And Palace are one of those teams that are just excellent at generating good chances. So, yeah, I think Mateta is a great pick. Unfortunately, we can just wait one more week and see if João Pedro finally does something or not. But yeah, Munoz, 2 assists, so 10-pointer for him. And he actually got DEFCON as well, which you don't see so often from fullbacks or wingbacks. Richard's also got DEFCON. So yeah, Munoz, another one, really tempting. He could even go triple up, you know, from that fixture run from game week 10 with Munoz, Sar, Mateta.
Yeah, I'm wondering about Munoz. He feels like the one defender at the moment who seems to be combating the sort of more cheaper defensive contribution or just general defensive contribution defenders. I know he got them in this game, but you're not generally picking Munoz in your team for that. You're picking it for the 2 assists that he's got. And I have already got Richards in my team and I'm very happy to have him. I think he's probably the best 4.5 option, especially with Senesi rising in price and Anderson being a doubt. I'm very happy to have him. But I do wonder where else I need to go in Palace. And if, you know, if Sarr is a more of a short-term pick because he's going away to the African Cup of Nations, could you just go Munoz instead and, you know, even play a back four with him instead of Sarr and take the defensive contributions, take the attacking returns, take the clean sheets that they're going to get and maybe add Mateta on top. So as you say, I'll probably give it a week, see how they play against Arsenal. And then we've stored up transfers between us. We have 9 transfers to use this week, which feels like a lot of them are going to be used on Crystal Palace players over either this week or probably in game week 10.
Yeah, that's why I'm kind of going to sit back. I might just make 2 transfers max rather than spend them all because I might regret it if I leave myself with too few transfers to get some Palace assets. But yeah, just also going back to the earlier point on getting the bench boost out of the way. And I think maybe we'll talk about them next quickly. Burnley 2, Leeds 0. So I'm looking at game week 9 fixtures. Burnley have got Wolves away. Leeds have got West Ham home. And I think most listeners are going to have some investment for either team, whether that's Dubravka or maybe you've got a Burnley defender or you could have Rodon or Goodmanson from Leeds. So yeah, I think you do well to get things to align like that in the future. So I would get out of the way. But yeah, Dubravka 9-pointer. They've actually beaten both the promoted teams 2-0, I believe. I've only played Dubravka twice this season myself, and that was game week 2 and on the bench boost last week. 2 clean sheets both times. Those are the 2 games they won. So I've got a soft spot for Dubravka after that. But yeah, a crazy stat here. Leeds are actually the 4th best team for expected goals conceded this season. 8.58 XGC. They're actually ahead of Sunderland, which might surprise the listeners because Sunderland, the one that we're really looking at, and of course they are much further up in the table. Sunderland 9.66 XGC, though, also really good 7th. Have you thought much about the triple captain and who you're going to target? Because I believe Haaland still has to play both Leeds and Sunderland.
He has, still has Leeds, Sunderland and West Ham at home, which is probably feeling like one of those 3 opportunities, depending on when we get there. Game week 17 at home to West Ham is actually probably my most favourite at the moment. Particularly because the spacing in and around the games for European fixtures and cup fixtures and things like that is slightly better for game week 17 than it is for game week 15 and game week 13. So at the moment, I'm probably looking at on one of those 3. Let's just hope that Erling Haaland can keep up his form by the time we get there.
Yeah, I guess play it by ear. Like if he gets a midweek rest in whatever midweek games they've got on before Leeds home and Sunderland home, then maybe I'll go earlier. But yeah, it'd be one of those 3 definitely for me. It's just I can't see myself using it on Salah. Or don't know if I'll even buy him back, to be honest with you. One player I actually also wanted to mention from Burnley is Florentino.
Yes.
He has averaged 15.12 defensive contributions per 90, which is top in the league. He's only 5 million. He did join up a little bit later. I think he wasn't even added to the game until game week 4, it might have been. But he's an interesting one if you just really want to target those DEFCONs week in, week out. He's putting up unbelievable numbers right now.
Yeah, as a sort of, you know, 5th midfielder, you know, if you're still playing a front 3, if you're sticking with Haaland, you're going with João Pedro and Mateta, if you want a cheap option at 5 million, he's definitely got to be in the conversation.
We've got to talk about Sunderland 2 Wolves nil at some point. So can you let me have this one?
Yeah, talk to us about your Mukiele pick, the fact that you definitely knew that he was going to take that chance so well and finish it.
I always knew he was a great finisher, yeah. No, I mean, when I was deciding who to get on the wild card, I was looking at, you know, formal defenders for the bench, and there was Mukiele or Durete, you know, there was Rodon, Gummison, these guys. And I just noticed that Mukiele was really good for defensive contributions. That was honestly just my reasoning. 12.5 per 90, only Senesi's averaging more among defenders. Senesi's on 13.75. Van Dijk's on 11.8, Tarkowski 11.5, Anderson 11.4. So they're the ones that have been really good for those defensive contributions. But I couldn't believe it. Like, you messaged, we're in a group chat together, and you messaged like, Mukiele. And I wasn't watching the game. I was out for a walk with the in-laws, and I was like, I thought you were winding me up. I was like, no way is Mukiele just scored for Sunderland. Yeah, and then he keeps the clean sheet, and he does get the DEFCON as well. So a nice extra 2 points. He gets the 3 bonus. So yeah, that was definitely like a top all-time FPL moment for me. And there's been a few good ones over the years, and that's definitely a new entry, that 17 pointer from the 4 mil defender.
Yeah, I mean, Sunderland have looked great so far this season, particularly at home. I think that's the big takeaway. They feel like the team, when you're going, you know, away to Sunderland, it might be a green fixture on the fixture ticker, but they are putting up a real fight. They're very physical. And yeah, they look like a team that are going to be difficult to play against, particularly when they're playing at home. Whereas the other side, Wolves feel like a team which are struggling a little bit and feel like one of those teams that we're looking to target. There's actually a stat that the three newly promoted teams have as many clean sheets already so far this season as all of the newly promoted teams had in the total of last season altogether, with 8.
Wow, that's so eight, it's, yeah.
It's just showing that those three teams that have come up, we'd normally be straight away looking to target a fixture against Burnley, a fixture against Leeds, and a fixture against Sunderland. But it's not proving to be quite so much the case. And it might be, feels like that Wolves fixture might be the one to target instead.
Yeah, and again, going back to that point earlier, like, Leeds are the fourth best team right now for expected goals conceded, Sunderland seventh. So yeah, it's very different this season in terms of the quality of the teams coming up. Who should we cover next? Should we go Man City 2, Everton 0?
Yeah, I mean, it's really the Erling Haaland show, but also there are a couple of other takeaways from it, because I feel like there must be enough conversations now about quite how amazing Erling Haaland has been so far this season. And it's interesting that he normally starts the season well, but he is on the most points at this stage after 8 games in an FPL season than he has been in the previous season. So he's starting even faster and looks probably even better from the eye test than maybe we've seen in previous seasons. But the other two things to take away from this are, unfortunately for you, is the Gvardiol missing out altogether, yeah, which was a surprise, minutes over the international break potentially causing that. But of course, they do have a lot of defenders, and that's always a risk when you buy a Manchester City outfield player. And the other minutes risk, of course, that we found out was Reinders. He did play quite a lot of minutes over the international break, but the 59th minute sub with some more tricky fixtures on the horizon has started to make me feel a little bit uneasy with him.
Yeah, 83 points Haaland's on after 8 games, which, as you said, is the most he's ever been on. That's 10 more than, by the way, he was on that in his record-breaking debut season. He was on 73 at this stage then. Yeah, Vardy was really frustrating. I really didn't expect this because he was benched for Croatia in their final international break game. So I saw that as quite encouraging. So I really didn't expect that. Maybe there's some kind of lingering problem there still. He did have an injury, didn't he, in the early weeks. O'Reilly played in left back. He had a really good game, and it was Ake in left centre back. So yeah, Reinders. Now that's obviously his earliest substitution this season, and a little bit worrying. And now I'm wondering, maybe I could sell him for Enzo and sell Vardy at the same time. So I'm thinking about some kind of combination like that and potentially fix two problems in my team. And of course, there's some players returning like Cherki, Marmoush. They may or may not have any impact on Reinders and his minutes. But yeah, that's at the back of my head now. And he's quite highly owned, Reinders, which is also scary if I was to sell, but also an opportunity, like if he does carry on ticking along with these 1, 2, 3 pointers. And Dyer, 12 defensive contributions in the first half. So that was great to see that locked in by half time. The one thing I did want to mention, it didn't actually come out of that game specifically, but I just read it yesterday. Everton announced it, that Braithwaite has had to have hamstring surgery and he could be out for months potentially. I saw that and I thought, Keane for 4.5 mil. Although this is like the classic FPL manager, isn't it? There's some injury news drops and you're immediately thinking, oh, what about this player? But like, honestly, Keane for 4.5 mil could be nailed long term. And he's averaging 9.99 defensive contributions per 90, which is top 10 defenders as well. Tarkowski is better, like for 11.5 per 90, but he is a million more. Keane's hitting defensive contributions points in 50% of games. But yeah, pretty good in terms of per 90. Is he an interesting option for 4.5 mil to you?
Yeah, well, I have Tarkowski in my team, and I'm really just looking at it wondering, if I needed some money, is Tarkowski really worth a million over going for someone like Akeen now, especially if we do get, you know, a confirmation that Branthwaite was going to be out for the foreseeable future? And I would probably be looking at him now. We've spoken about a few of those cheaper defenders that you've got. And if you needed an Anderson replacement this week and you've already got a Palace defender, I think you could do much worse than going to Keane. I know it's Spurs at home this week, which you might not look that great. We can go to them next, though. But yeah, I really like him at 4.5. The way Everton play leads the defenders to get good contribution numbers. We've seen that with Tarkowski. That's why he's been a popular pick. But yeah, at a much cheaper price, someone like Akeen could be a real shoo-in.
I suppose there's still a small chance that O'Brien could move to centre-back and then someone could go to right-back, whether it's Coleman gets the odd game or Garner can play there. But yeah, I think he's an interesting one. The fixtures aren't too bad. After Spurs, they've got Sunderland away, Fulham home, Man United away, Newcastle, Bournemouth, Forest. So yeah, he's an interesting one. And yeah, if hamstring surgery, could be out for a while as well. So he might be a pick you could just buy for cheap and he does well, ticks along. Lots to think about there. But you mentioned Spurs. So yeah, Spurs won, Villa 2. And this was quite unlucky because Villa registered 0.32 expected goals, which was actually the lowest of last game week. And yet they won 2-1. What are your thoughts on Spurs and Villa assets and that result?
Yeah, I have to say, I wasn't watching the game. And then I saw a notification come in that Van de Ven had assisted Kudos. And luckily it got ruled out for offside. But when there's two players who can damage your rank and your game week quite as much and one assists the other one at about 5 minutes into the game, you really do begin to fear the worst with no Spurs in my team. But Spurs started really well, particularly the first sort of 30 minutes, the first half of that game. Spurs were great. And then Rodgers pulled that goal out of absolute nowhere. And someone has picked Rodgers early on in the season. It is nice to see him getting back on the score sheet. But the second half, Villa just started to grow into it. They didn't create an awful lot of chances, but they grew into it. Spurs didn't have nearly as much, and Spurs started to struggle to create chances in that second half. The first 30 minutes, I thought Spurs should have been out of sight potentially, and it should have been, you know, 2-3-0 up. And Kudos is still the one that I would look at that is just so involved in absolutely everything that Spurs are doing. But their fixtures do start to turn a little bit now, right? So they've got that Everton fixture that we've spoken about this week. Then it's Chelsea, Man United, Arsenal, Fulham, Newcastle in the next few runs. And it's more, if you've got them, what do you look to do with them over the next few weeks? Have you got any Spurs?
I do not now, no. I had Porro and Romero earlier in the season and I didn't go for Kudus actually at any point. But no, right now I'm not invested. And but yeah, Villa's fixtures as well actually are kind of mixed. Like they've got City and Liverpool there next too. So I think it's a chance to hop off these types of assets. Rodgers though, so he blanks the first five game weeks in a row. And then I decide to sell him. I start the season actually with Rodgers and Watkins. And of course they both blank for the first five game weeks. And in the three games since I sold Rodgers, he's got a goal involvement. Obviously scoring a really great goal as well against Spurs there. I mean, he just couldn't write it. But yeah, Watkins on the bench as well. I think he picked up something over the international break. So I believe that was why he was benched there. And Richarlison was also benched. Because of course, Tells scored having started before the break. But I wouldn't actually be surprised if Richarlison starts the next one. But yeah, I think, again, I'd be looking to move the likes of Richarlison. And if you've still got Watkins or Rodgers, I'd definitely be selling them as well.
So let's go to probably the big game of the weekend from a footballing point of view, which was Liverpool 1, Manchester United 2. And going into this game as a Bruno Fernandes holder, I wasn't expecting very much. He did come away as probably the key headline here with 8 points. But there are so many headlines to talk about from both sides. I think at Man United, Mbeumo continues to look very good. I've been really impressed with him so far this season. He's been one of the big underperformers in terms of his XG compared to the amount of goals he's actually scored. And he gave Manchester United the lead early on. I think there's also to talk about in terms of Lammens. I think he's come in and made a real difference and it's helped the rest of the team having that confident goalkeeper behind them. But the takeaway has to be the fact that Liverpool have lost again and Mo Salah is probably the best FPL asset over the past few years, has blanked again.
Yeah, four losses on the bounce for Slot. That's the first time that's happened in his managerial career. The last time Liverpool lost four on the bounce was 2014 under Brendan Rodgers. So yeah, this is almost unprecedented. And yeah, and Bumo, 2 minutes into the game as well, Amad assist. There's only been a goal that early in a game between those two, Liverpool, Man United, once ever before. And that was back in 1995 when Nicky Butt scored for Man United at Old Trafford. Yeah, Gakpo with the equaliser. Interesting, Gakpo and Bumo. You mentioned Bumo's stats, but Gakpo's are actually excellent as well. No midfielder has got a higher non-penalty expected goal involvement than Gakpo's 4.18. But Mbeumo is very close in second with 4.13. So, yeah, I do think Mbeumo's gone under the radar. I guess it's just the price tag, right? Because you've got the likes of Sarr and Enzo also putting up good numbers, 3.5 for Sarr, 3.47 for Enzo. Maybe that's why people just aren't going there with Mbeumo. But, yeah, he's been unlucky not to have more points. And yet another Salah blank as well. So 36 points he's on for the season. As a reminder, Haaland 83. It's just night and day between them, which we didn't expect. 36 points is the lowest that Salah's been on at this stage ever in his Liverpool career. But yeah, I'm glad I kept Bruno, and I agree with what you said. I didn't expect Bruno to get anything in this game. He's created 22 chances this season, though, which is five more than anyone. And I have to say, I know a lot of people have just sold him, but the fixtures actually look great as well long term. So it's Brighton, Forest, Spurs, Everton, Palace, West Ham, Wolves and Bournemouth. So yeah, I'm quite happy to have Bruno and I'm going to keep him for a while. And the very last game to mention is Monday night's game. 2-0 loss for West Ham, home to Brentford. Thiago with a goal. He actually got another one, didn't he? And it was ruled offside. What do you think of this game?
Yeah, I was really impressed by Brentford and particularly Thiago. If you're looking for a cheap forward, I think he might be up to about 6.1 million now, but under that sort of 7.5 bracket where the Matetas, the João Pedros, the Valtamadas sit, if you need a cheaper one, I think Thiago's got to be the one that you're looking at. I know it's Liverpool this week, which is quite difficult. Then it's Palace. Things do start to get a little bit better from game week 11, where they have Newcastle at home, Brighton, and then Burnley. But if you are looking for a cheap forward, they do feel like, in the past, they've created chances specifically from Bournemouth and Vissa. And it feels like now that Brentford team want to give Thiago as many chances. He didn't score before he got his first goal. And then he had another one ruled out for a very tight offside. He could have come away from this game with a haul similar to Mateta, and we'd be, you know, talking about him as another forward we should be looking at. So I was very impressed with him. And as we said, like the Wolves fixture feels like one to target at the moment. It also feels like the way that West Ham played in this game on Monday night, that might be a fixture that we look at. For example, if you've got a Leeds defender this week at home to West Ham and you're wondering about playing them or not, or you're running about bench boosting or not, I would probably be doing my best to get them into my lineup.
And I've got my notes. 4.4 million Marshall came on around 60 minutes, but I suppose there's no reason to look at him when you've got Creepy starting and scoring a brace. West Ham only registered 0.3 expected goals. Really, really poor. Brentford 2.3 expected goals. So yeah, deserved winners. Brentford took 22 shots against West Ham, which was more than any team in Gaming 8. I mentioned at the start of the podcast that I'm looking to buy a defender, potentially to replace Vardy and free up funds for someone like Enzo. And the two players I was looking to scout were Mavropanos and Diouf. They're both benched. So I'm kind of glad that happened that game and not the next one when I might have owned one of them. They did both come on at half time. Mavropanos, I think, had to go back off actually with a possible hamstring injury. But yeah, result aside, that's completely put me off buying any West Ham assets. I guess if you've got Bowen, you keep hold. Paquetar could still be good. But yeah, other than that, just not seeing much value there.
Yeah, if you've got Bowen, you'll definitely be looking at the likes of Mateta and Valtamada and wondering at a similar price if you could move to them. But I'd probably, again, just give it this week, see how West Ham get on against Leeds, and then in game week 10, have a similar review. And just like you, I was actually wondering about some of their slightly cheaper defenders, particularly Mavropanos, because of how good his defensive contributions are, and potentially Paqueta as a cheap midfielder who also got 9 defensive contributions, so 3 away from what he needs as a midfielder, potentially on penalties, potentially on some set pieces. But he feels like, we've spoken a little bit about João Pedro and a few others, players who are actually hampered when they end up playing further forward. And that was similar for Paqueta in this game. I thought he played a lot of minutes up front and it doesn't do him that much good in terms of his FPL output, partially because he doesn't get as many defensive contributions as he plays up there. So yeah, West Ham are are an avoid for me, and Brentford, I might have a look at Thiago if I need a slightly cheaper forward.
I really enjoyed that. As a reminder to everyone, we are heading into another busy midweek period with 9 of the Premier League clubs playing in the Champions League, Europa League and the Conference League competitions. So do be patient with those transfers. But not too patient, as there's a Friday night deadline ahead of the match between Leeds and West Ham.
Yeah, so West Ham playing on Monday night and then back again in action on Friday. And of course, Kelly, Jules and Sam will be back in action later this week on Thursday to reflect on all of those European matches and discuss all the key talking points ahead of Game Week 9.
If you haven't done so already, don't forget to join the FPL Pod Mini League. The code is XY6XPL. Harry, been great chatting. Good luck in Game Week 9.
And to you. Hopefully not too good and I can climb back above you, but I hope you have a good week and everyone listeners as well.